Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. There have been too many high-profile incidents of child sex abuse in our schools of late for us not to have a difficult conversation tonight. Public schools, private schools, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and beyond. It doesn't matter because it's still happening. And so we're going to arm parents tonight with the information they need to protect their children against sex abuse. My guest is Michelle Booth Cole, Executive Director of Safe Shores, the D.C. Children's Advocacy Center. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call tonight, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is a difficult conversation. There will be a delicate yet important information that you will receive tonight. So be prepared to hear some difficult information. Michelle, always good to see you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Why now? Why do we wait until school opens for this to be a critical issue when child sex abuse doesn't just happen in the schools?
Well, I think you just said it. It doesn't just happen at school. It doesn't just happen during the school year. People tend to focus on kids because school is what we associate with children, and they spend so much of their time there, right? They're there with their teachers and faculty more than they're with their parents. But as you intimated, it's happening all year round. And what we tend to see, social workers are usually bracing themselves for back to school because there's often a spike in the number of reports of child abuse when kids come back to school. Because this is a safe space, because teachers are discovering maybe marks or bruises, because there are disclosures. What did you do? What happened to you this summer? And so often there's actually a pretty big spike in reporting when kids go back to school.
Now, with that said, and I think that's a critical piece, we're talking young kids and we're talking summer. So, yeah, they're jumping around and falling and rolling in the grass. They still do that, don't they?
I've been on another program where we were talking about the lack of green space for a lot of children in our community. But we're not just talking about younger children. We're talking about, I mean, remember, my thing is they're kids until they are legally 18, and then that brain doesn't finish developing until they're about 24, 25, which you and I as parents very well know. So, yeah, there's a pattern, though, and there's signs when a child has been physically abused versus some type of fall or accident. And doctors are very, and nurses, pediatric nurses and doctors are very astute at discerning that.
So what should parents look for? What are the first signs that may present once kids start school that suggests that something wrong is happening?
Well, hopefully parents have been talking to their children all summer. I mean, we talk about having this relationship where you're always talking with your child. And hopefully parents are also doing their due diligence with the institutions where they're sending their children, because adults are the first line of defense in protecting children from child sexual abuse. And so it's not just parents, it's the schools too, the teachers, the heads of schools, the faculty, everybody who works there. So my hope is that parents are holding those institutions accountable, asking the questions that they should be asking to protect their children. What kind of training do you do for your staff? What kind of background checks do you do for your staff? What kind of policies do you have about one adult, one child interactions in your institution? What's the environmental scan? What kind of hidden spaces are there in the school, under the steps, behind different places? How are you making sure those spaces are monitored so that children are safe? So all those kinds of questions parents should be asking of the institutions where they send their children, and those schools should have answers.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about child sex abuse in our schools. What do parents need to know to protect their children Indeed, not just the parents. What do teachers need to know? What do administrators need to know? What do the children need to look out for as this school year gets underway? Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment, if you have something that is questionable that you are concerned about. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michelle, let's start with the youngest children, the ones that are in the, let's say, the first years of elementary school. What should a parent be aware of if something is suspicious?
Well, hopefully parents will know their children well enough to observe a change in behavior, right? That's often what we're talking about looking for in particularly young children, but older children as well. You need to know your child well enough to see if when they're coming from school, are they more sullen? Are they more withdrawn? Are they maybe angrier? Are there people that when you mention them or when they see them, they seem to be uncomfortable or they don't want to spend time in certain places? So part of what our role is as adults is making sure that we know the children in our lives well enough to be able to discern a difference in how they're responding to individuals and to situations. And sometimes we'll see in children regression in terms of things they've already mastered, like maybe they've long since not been, you know, wetting the bed. And if something has happened, maybe they will regress and start wetting the bed again. There could be nightmares. Obviously, there could be some physical signs. So parents really need to be just observers, close observers of their children, and constantly be having conversations that make the lines of communication remain open and comfortable so that children feel safe sharing with their children feel safe sharing with their parents. And basically doing the daily debrief. What happened at school today? What was your high? What was your low? Who did you eat with? Who did you play with? You know? And it doesn't feel like an interrogation. We want to create safe spaces and relationships where our children just kind of spill when they get in the car.
How should you first address this issue with your very young child before you suspect that anything is happening? How do you talk to a first grader or a second grader or a third grader? Even when you do not suspect that anything is going on, but you want to be proactive.
Right, absolutely. We want to teach our child, starting at very early ages, body safety and boundaries. So as soon as children are mastering and acquiring language, let's start by teaching them the right names for their body parts, right? All of their body parts. Let's not create shame or stigma around their vagina, their penis, those things like that. And as you help them master, one, giving children language gives them power, right? And giving children language is also a signal to people around who might be perpetrators that that child has somebody who cares about them enough to keep them informed and teach them the things they need to know. So young children, we're giving them language. As they get a little older, and obviously we always want to do what's developmentally appropriate, but 3, 4, we want to teach them about boundaries and appropriate touch and areas that are not spaces where anybody should touch them. So you can talk about the places where your swimsuit covers, right? Little kids get that. They go to the pools in the summer and they understand those are your private parts. No one should touch you there, right? And if someone does touch you, or we also remember, or someone asks you to touch them, right? Or shows you their private parts, you need to tell mom or dad. And you won't have done anything wrong. That's not your fault. I'm here to protect you. So tell me if somebody does that. And there's some great booklets that parents can do with their children with little games and connect the dot games. There's a company called Channing Bet. Our organization, Safe Shores, the DC Children's Advocacy Center, provides these when we do our prevention training, Stewards of Children training. We provide these because parents often say, how do I start this conversation? How do I talk to a child? So these little booklets, parents can sit down and do the games, but also start having the conversations. And then as they get older, again, we're talking about noticing what they're going to be wanting to know about. Because you said it, parents should be their children's first teacher, right? So 3, 5, we're doing body safety, boundaries. 6, 7, 8, we should be talking about the things that they're observing in the world. How do people, where do babies come from? By 8, we should have talked about menstruation with the girls, right? Because you don't want them to be surprised. So all these things that are part of the natural course of human development, parents need to be the source of information, because when we're not, kids still want to know, and then they'll just go to the wrong place and find it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Michelle Booth Cole. She is the executive director of Safe Shores, the D.C. Children's Advocacy Center, and we are having a very important and delicate conversation tonight as it relates to child sex abuse. As a parent, what is it that you need to know? How do you talk to your children? What do you need to watch out for? School is getting underway in our area as well as across the nation. This is not just a local issue. This is happening absolutely everywhere. So how do you protect your children? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please also remember that we will be taking these phone calls even after 7:30 as they come through. So you mentioned the age group, the, you know, second grade, third mm-hmm. grade, fourth grade, and the like. And then, you know, on into that preteen time. Mm-hmm. How is the conversation different when you were talking about young teenagers? Because we had, and this is why I ask this, because we have seen very recently, and I even heard a report today about this happened, I believe it was either California or Arizona, where a 25-year-old high school coach is now in jail, and that 16-year-old girl that he was coaching is back home because he was accused of sexually abusing her, but she ran off mm-hmm. with him. That's mm-hmm. a completely different dynamic than the one where you're talking about elementary school kids or, mm-hmm. or middle school kids.
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that children of any age are vulnerable to sexual abuse, to manipulation. So we really need to be talking with our teens and be in tune with where their heads are. And we also need to realize that adults who target children as they're victims of sexual abuse, they are very good at grooming children of all ages.
When you say grooming, what do you mean?
So grooming is when a perpetrator engages in behavior to build trust in them, confidence in them by the child, but also by adults who are around that child, who are in the environment, so that adults will trust them with that child. So they may, with the child, for example, or with a teen, maybe they'll use more adult language, like, oh, you don't have to tell people I talked like this to you, but I know you're mature. I know you can do that. Maybe it'll be gifts. Maybe it'll be gift cards, right? Maybe it'll be a phone that their parents don't know about. I mean, you know, folk use things that they know speak to teens, preteens, their desire for independence, their desire, their natural curiosity about the world. That's what they play on. And if, again, adults who genuinely care about and want to protect children are not anticipating these interests, are not having these conversations, then we leave our children open and vulnerable to those adults who are unsafe and will provide that information in very dangerous, unhealthy ways.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Angel calling from Laurel, what's on your mind? Quickly, please. Angel, are you there? Give us a call back if you can. I'm going to be going to a break in just a bit, but I want to make sure that our listeners know that we are going to be taking your phone call. So please give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me get a few resources from you real quick, Michelle. As always, these resources will be posted on our website, whur.com, but something that parents can take away real quick.
Sure. Well, of course, I'd send them to Safe Shores website, safeshores.org, safeshores.org. So that will tell you what we do at the Children's Advocacy Center. It will tell you about trainings that we do for the public. In fact, there's one tonight. We're doing Stewards of Children en Español. There were 25 people at the center when I left doing that, but we do it in English and Spanish. We do it multiple times, usually at least once or twice a month, free to the public. So we encourage people to do that. I think stopitnow.org is another organization that has great resources for parents and caregivers. Darkness to Light is another organization. So there are a lot of places, they're not a lot, but there are a number of places that are providing really great information for parents and caregivers. And when we come back, I'd love to tell you what our hope is that teachers and educators will be doing this school year.
Well, we will definitely get to that and much, much more. Amaris calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you next. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program, so definitely stay with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. Your phone calls are next after the break. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are arming our parents tonight with the information they need to protect their children against sex abuse. My guest is Michelle Booth Cole, Executive Director of Safe Shores, the D.C. Children's Advocacy Center. Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Amaris calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm a caregiver, and I just want to let parents know that when you are talking with your children, when they are confronted by an adult that they and something happens that they don't like, or an adult tells them to keep their secret, I explain to my students that I work with that adults don't tell children to keep secrets. So I explain to them that they should keep surprises. If an adult tells you to keep a secret, you keep it as a surprise until you get home and you tell your parents, you tell whoever you trust, because no adult should ever tell a child to keep their secret.
Interesting. Amaris, thank you so much. Your thoughts about that, Michelle?
Amaris, right on point. Absolutely. Child sexual abuse thrives in an environment of silence and shame and secrecy. And so Amara knows exactly what she's talking about. And that's often what perpetrators do. Oh, this is our secret. Don't tell anyone. But if parents have been or caregivers have been having that conversation with children that we don't keep secrets in our family, we may have surprises for a birthday or we may have surprises for such, but we don't keep secrets from each other, right? So she's absolutely right. So we know children are more vulnerable when they don't have safe, trusted adults to come to their questions, come with their questions to about sex, about body parts. And here's what perpetrators do. If we don't fill that role as responsible adults, they will fill that role. So no secrets, right? And let's keep talking to them about the things that they want to know about at the stages they want to know. Kids will tell you when you've told them too much information, right? But when they have questions, we have to be prepared to answer them. And that's really us being grown-ups, right? Which means we have to read up a little bit. My kids send me back to the books, right? This is the most important job somebody can have. It doesn't require a license. It doesn't require a certificate. They let you leave the hospital with this little person. And there's no previous learning required. And yet, it's so complex in some ways. So we got to seek out information as parents and responsible caring adults and make sure we're not afraid to talk about it, because this stuff can feel a little uncomfortable. Maybe we were brought up in a family where people didn't talk about it. In fact, they were encouraged not to talk about it.
Right.
And we have to break that cycle. We really have to bring this stuff out in the open. So our children know that there's one, no shame in talking about it. And two, in fact, it's a protective factor when we do talk about it. We do better in terms of protecting our children when we're talking about it. And everyone needs to talk about it. I think one of the things that really concerns us at Safe Shores is that people think that it only happens to certain kids or it only happens in certain places, that child sexual abuse can't happen in my institution, particularly if these are more privileged places, right? And here's what we know. It happens everywhere. If 1 in 10 kids in the United States will be sexually abused by the time they turn 18, that's happening everywhere. And when we don't talk about abuse as something that happens to everyone, we leave our children vulnerable because we're not being proactive in taking those steps to protect them. So when we have an honest approach and we say this can happen anywhere, it cuts across socioeconomic status, it cuts across race, it cuts across all those things. When we have those honest conversations, we will be saying prevention is for everyone, and every adult needs to know how to prevent child sexual abuse. Well,
and I think you make a really critical point, but this is really outside of the purview of the schools, but the story that just came out last week, mm-hmm. about Asia Argento, mm-hmm. the actress who is now accused of having sex with the 17-year-old boy that she was acting with years before when he was very, very young. But even at 17, the age of consent in California is 18. Mm. And so she is accused of committing a crime. He did not talk about that. Mm. And I think that even with the older children, if even outside of the sex abuse piece, they also need to be aware of what the law says.
True. What their rights are, what adults should and shouldn't be doing. I think, I don't know a lot of the details about that case, but I do know in instances where boys are victims of sexual abuse, there's a lot of pressure not to tell. If the perpetrator is a woman, there's this huge kind of misogynistic culture. Oh, attaboy, boys, you know, that's a good thing. As opposed to realizing this is a child, and that adult woman had a responsibility to hold that relationship sacrosanct and protect that child and not manipulate and take advantage of what she knew might be adolescent or pubescent curiosity or interest, right? So that's still child sexual abuse. It's just in our society, we have a real double standard when we talk about the abuse of boys, but it's very widespread. And a lot of the times boys, again, don't feel comfortable coming forward, feel like it's going to make people look at them differently, regardless of the gender of the perpetrator.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Angel. Oops, did we lose Angel? I think we did. Give us a call back if you can. I want to drill down a little bit more about the differences between the girls and the boys. Should it be approached differently? Should you look for different kinds of signs when it comes to a suspicion that a girl versus a boy has been abused?
I think educating our children is the same whether it's boys or girls in terms of sexual abuse. We need to provide them, we need to equip them with really solid understanding of boundaries, of what it means to consent. We need to make sure that they understand at a very young age that no one has the right to touch them. That's a gender neutral. That doesn't matter. That is a fundamental right. There's nothing more private than your own body. And we need to be teaching that to boys and to girls. So I wouldn't say there's a huge difference. And then in terms of if they are victims, I think the challenge is making sure that, again, you know your child, whether it's your son or your daughter. You know them well enough to spot a change in their demeanor, in the behavior, in their mood, any of it. That's what we're looking for. And that it's an ongoing thing, because we all know adolescents can have their moods. And I'm looking at my beautiful daughter who's here with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
well, she was friendly
and
today.
I'm shouting you out, Justine, yeah. Before you call me out when we get in the car. I'm saying your name, love. But the reality is, we need to be able to know our kids well enough. And, you know, I say this every time we're here. It's counterculture. Parenting is counterculture because it means you got to slow down. It means you got to put your phone down. It means you got to be present for those conversations when they're ready to have them. Those are protective factors. When we know our children, when we give them our time, our presence, that's with a C-E and not with a T-S at the end, mm-hmm. right? That's what we're trying to cultivate in our children is relationship. And that protects them.
Do we have Angel yet? She's, okay, there we go. Okay, Angel calling from Laurel. Thanks for calling back. What's on your mind?
Oh, just a couple things here. Not all the time are the kids going to give you a behavioral change. So parents, you really got to watch your kids. And then outspoken kids, sometimes you think they won't tell you, but I mean that they will say if someone messes with them, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily true either.
You're right.
And then when the parents are talking to the kids or parent, please be sure on whoever the adults are, even exclude mention themselves. If I touch you, tell dad. If dad touch you, tell grandma. Don't give anybody a way out. Like the pastor touches you, come tell so and so. So that they don't think that, or since you didn't mention mom, then if mom does it, they don't tell you.
Okay.
Don't give anyone a pass. Yep.
Then last but not least, tell them not to molest other people. Because sometimes we're always looking at our kids to be the victim, but they could also be the perpetrator. And I say all of this through living through the experience. So I want to make sure you capture those points.
Thank you so much, Angel. All of those really critical, important points. So thank you so much. Michelle, you want to continue with what she was sharing with us?
What she said is absolutely true. Children will not always tell us, right? Which is why adults have to be equipped and trained to put the prevention we need in place. And it's all adults. It's not just some, right? So we need consistency. When you're talking about protecting children, consistency is key. Consistent policies, consistent rules that are enforced for everyone. That's part of what we've seen in terms of the problem of the schools, right? There were adults who had access to kids whom everybody thought was just such a great person, and they had relationships with administrators, and those were not safe adults for those kids. And rules were not being followed if they were in place. And so that consistency and holding all adults to the same standard, Angel said it, you should tell them no one is to touch you, right? And after a certain age, kids can toilet themselves, they can bathe themselves, and you'll have kids who tell me, mommy, I can do that on my own. And she's absolutely right. Don't exempt anyone, because if we start carving out those exceptions, kids can't not necessarily navigate those nuances.
They don't know the difference.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's hold all adults to a standard of protecting children.
Carmita, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Carmita. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say hello, everyone, and to the panel. And I would like to know, how do you address that issue with your children, for me, grandchildren, who are for relatives in the family? Because I was molested, but I wasn't sexually, what's the word I'm looking for? I was molested, but not to the point where it was...
Saying there was sexual molestation, but you're not necessarily penetration or the like.
I didn't want to say that on the air.
That's quite all right. This is a real conversation, and we're using real words and making sure that people have as much information as they can. And it's a tough conversation, but it's important. So please go right ahead, Carmen.
I didn't want to say that because
it's okay.
We were on the air. I was sexually molested by a close family member that my parents trusted to babysit us when we were young. And I saw him for the first time 2 years ago at a family function, and I just went berserk on him. I just could not hold myself in. And just the fact that I know that there are close family members that would do this, we need to address that with our children and as well, too, that no one, under any circumstances, should touch you where a bathing suit goes.
Right. Yeah. Well, let me see if Michelle can follow up, because that's another piece. School is one thing. Family is a different dynamic.
Well, the majority of children are sexually abused by someone that they and their family know. It is a crime of access. It's a crime of familiarity. It's a crime of relationship. So that is what she described is very, very common. And again, close family friend, somebody their parents trusted to leave their children. Well, that person had been building that relationship. They're trying to gain access to that child. And that's, again, why we go back to consistency. all adults should be held to the same standard. We don't leave adults with unfettered access to our children, nobody popping in, nobody FaceTiming, nobody checking on them, right? There are things that we can do to make every situation a bit safer if we're using a lens of child protection, of keeping our kids safe in any kind of situation. So absolutely, I was that mom who followed my kids around at family picnics and reunions when they were little. I had three girls. I was on my toes, right? Because you have to hold everyone to the standard of I am going to protect my kids. And there's no one who's out of the realm of possibility. If we have bishops and ministers and coaches and doctors, heads of the, what, U.S. gymnastics, women gymnastics team?
Yeah,
the
Michigan State
we have people
University,
with
yeah.
huge positions and education and lofty titles. These people are not safe for our kids. Then why would we hold anybody out there as you can just have access to my kid?
Yeah. I need to take a break. Carmita, thank you so much for sharing with us. We'll be back as we continue this discussion about protecting your children from child sex abuse. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment.
Radio.com.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher as we continue our conversation about protecting your children against child sex abuse. What was your reaction when the news about the Pennsylvania grand jury report came out and you heard that over 70 years, more than 1,000 child victims in the Catholic Church? What came to mind as you look at 2018 in protecting children?
Well, one, I wasn't surprised. Two, I think it's the tip of the iceberg. They've only done that kind of thorough investigation in one state. I'm hopeful that other states will do the same. We know that there are way more victims than that because it's often underreported. So that was my reaction. As we head into the school year, which is what we're talking about, here's what we'd love to see happen, because it happened yesterday. My colleague Ashley Harrell and I went to a school at the invitation of the head of school to have a talk with all the teachers, all the faculty, about mandated reporting, about what's appropriate. This is a school that serves younger children. So what's appropriate behavior and how can we distinguish appropriate, age appropriate behavior and curiosity from something that should be concerning, right? And the teachers, we talked for maybe about 20 minutes and shared information. And then the rest of the 90 minutes, question after question after question. And what that leader did at that school was, one, send a signal that it is important that we talk about this as a community. So it was a very courageous thing for her to do, but it just showed so much integrity and so much commitment to protecting the children in their care.
What were they asking?
They were asking about behaviors. What if a little child does this? They work with like pre-K to third or fourth grade. And so they were asking about reporting and what happens when you report, what the process looks like. They were asking about the risk taking that they have to do as an educator if they see something and they have asked the parent about it. And maybe the parent has said, oh, that's okay, we know about it. But as a child development expert, which they are as a teacher, they know that it's not okay. And yeah, you're going to have to go ahead and report, even though the parent is condoning the behavior because it's not a healthy behavior. I mean, so one, for her to create an environment where the teachers felt safe to ask those questions. Two, where they're learning in community. It sends a signal that this community is not going to stand back in fear, but we're going to move toward this issue. We're going to be knowledgeable about this issue. And then hopefully they'll do more training with the staff, but also training with the parents. Shouldn't parents have the same information that teachers have about how to protect kids from abuse? Imagine a educational community where everybody learns the same thing and everybody's holding each other accountable for the safety of the children in their care. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about changing the culture of institutions and communities so that protecting children is not looked at something as inconvenient or something we do to manage PR or risk management. It is what we do because it is our responsibility to keep them safe because children cannot protect themselves.
Historically, sex abuse related crimes have been the purview of male perpetrators. But are you surprised now that we are hearing, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, are you surprised that we are seeing more women committing these crimes?
I don't know that we're seeing it necessarily more. I think the data show that about 5% of perpetrators are female. I think what we're seeing is more of a receptiveness to hearing about it and to reporting it. Maybe some victims, not all, but maybe a few feel safer disclosing. There was a case a few weeks ago where a teacher had sexually abused, I think, a 14-year-old male student. And the judge and the prosecutor took a very lenient attitude toward her. And you're just like, well, what's that about, right? Oh, we don't want to potentially ruin her career by taking away her teaching license. This is someone who violated her professional duty to keep children safe. And you've got a judicial system that in this instance was looking at her in a somewhat sympathetic way, maybe because in their eyes she was attractive, or maybe they were bringing kind of a very hetero misogynistic male lens to it. But you're like, well, wait a minute, that's a teacher. She's supposed to protect students. She didn't. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think maybe there is just maybe a more openness to talking about it. But I don't think there's necessarily a greater and increased prevalence.
What do you say to parents who may be concerned that they are, because of conversations like this one, publicity that we have seen, news reports and everything else, that they may be paranoid about and may be concerned with overreacting to the information that they have been absorbing over the past months, years, as their children get older?
It is scary. It's scary for parents. When you love your children, you don't want anybody to hurt them. You don't want these things to happen. But what's the rational way to deal with fear, right? It's not to recoil from it. It's to get smart. It's to educate yourself. It's to give yourself the knowledge that you need as an adult to protect your child, to at least know what signs are, know how to scan environments, know how to hold institutions accountable, and to be very comfortable telling other adults, like sleepovers or play dates, asking those questions, just like you would ask, do you have a gun in your house? Do you have a weapon in your house? Maybe you're going to ask the same thing about who's going to be there? Who's going to be watching the children? What will they have access to? So we don't want to encourage paranoia. That's not what this is about. We're not trying to create a world where you can't or don't trust people. What we're saying is we need to stop thinking that sexual abuse can only happen with certain kinds of people, that only certain kinds of people do it. And if we hold all adults to the same standard, train adults on how to keep kids safe, make sure institutions, faith institutions, schools, camps, music schools, all these places where our kids recreate, play sports, we need to make sure that anybody who has contact with kids is held accountable. And that means learning how to keep kids safe. We don't just tell kids, my colleague had this great notion, oh, a safe or unsafe adult. We don't tell our children only to wear seatbelts when the driver is not a good driver. You wear your seatbelt all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Because we just hold everyone to the same standard. And that's what we're suggesting with this. This is an approach to really change our culture to say, we're just going to do what it takes to keep kids safe. Are we going to cover? Are we going to be able to prevent everything? No, but I bet we're going to prevent a lot of it. And right now, those kids are falling through the cracks, getting harmed because adults are not willing to spend the time and the resources to get trained, to put the policies in place, and to continue having those conversations as a community and creating safe spaces where adults, like those teachers we were with yesterday, can ask those questions so they can be better at working with children, at keeping them safe, because when children are safe in their bodies, they learn better.
Well, one of the things we talked about, little kids and how to educate them and the preteens and what to say to parents. But I think there's one of the things that may be missing is those older teenagers and what their responsibility may be if they see something happening to one of their peers. How do you talk to those 15, 16, 17 year olds when they may see one of their peers hanging with a teacher a little bit too much because you've got peer pressure and you've got the whole snitching situation. What do you say to those kids? How do you educate them? And I've got about three more minutes left, but you're sharing about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think we want to encourage our adolescents to protect their friends, and I think they have a natural protective instinct. I think you do tell them that if you've seen something and you're afraid for your friend's safety, it's the right thing to tell a responsible adult so that we can make sure he or she is safe. Because the fact is you can't control what's going to happen in that situation, and it's not your responsibility. It's an adult responsibility. So tell an adult, because not only may that, whoever that adult is, a coach or whatever, have done it to your friend or be doing something to your friend, there may be other kids that they've hurt, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not just doing something to help your friend, you're helping other young people, other kids too. So we want to encourage them to talk to us. We don't want to overreact when they do. We want to stay calm. We want to listen, right? And we want to not promise that we can make things happen that can't, but just say we're going to take every step that we can to try to make sure that your friend is safer.
Well, you made a really critical point, because often when we cover these kinds of situations, once someone has been accused, arrested, charged, one of the things that police always say, particularly as it relates to school situations, they always ask parents and students to come forward because they believe that there may be other cases.
Yeah.
This is not a standalone situation. Michelle Boothcole, always good to have you here with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
for
much
talking to me. And for our listeners, as always, the information that we were discussing today, resources, will be posted on WHUR.com a little bit after 8:30. So again, I want you to pay attention to that. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, August 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.